AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and I would like to welcome a prior guest back to the show, Mr. Sean Parnell, the founder of the Self-Pay Patient. I think over the past several weeks, we've been watching this rollout of Obamacare, and every day, I was just speaking with my producer, every day another shoe drops, another layer of this rotten fruit is being revealed to us. And I knew it all along that it wasn't about healthcare, that it was about control, that it was about micromanaging personal decisions while making everybody pay more for the privilege. It's a tax. It's going to kill people. And the people who are proponents of this seem to be tone deaf, or maybe this was their goal all along. They could care less about people's health. But when they say 5% as if it's nothing, and people are just being transitioned as if there's no human cost in this, it's ghoulish. It's actually, there's no other way to put it. And you have to wonder, what kind of people are these that would think it's okay to shuttle people from having health care, from being able to play the game correctly, to pay for what they've earned, get a commodity or service because they want what the specific tenets of it, they get what they want, to be shoved off of that into a system where you become a government handout victim and have your rights and your choice taken away, and then supposedly be happy about it. It's very maddening. I don't know about you, Mr. Parnell, but are you watching this with as much disgust as I am?
Well, I certainly am not happy to see the way the law is upsetting a lot of arrangements that people have had. I mean, people did have health insurance in the individual market that they liked, and mm-hmm. now they're not able to keep that, and they're frankly being insulted. They're being told by a variety of politicians that basically they were dumb for liking that plan that they had. And it wasn't real insurance. It was junk insurance and so forth. And, now they're basically being forced to join a system that in many cases isn't going to meet their needs nearly as well as the plans that they had.
Now, I see this as a big picture point. You know, the whole healthcare system is a global system. You know, the ICD coding system. The ICD-10, which is the most recent iteration, is coming online. And we're the last developed country to join this system. It's a socialized medical system. It's based on time, not patient care, really. So you're basically undervalued as a caregiver, and you're supposed to be locked into the system. If you look at Canada's system and the system in the UK, the people who basically are being very disingenuous about how fabulous those systems are. You need to look closer. Most doctors are either, they rotate out, they do private care because they can't afford to see the public service patients and actually stay open. And the choice and the waiting, the long list of waiting for care is horrendous and is rationing by definition, because if you're waiting for a kidney transplant, I don't even know if you get it over there, or a hip replacement or something where it's chronic and you can just wait until you can, you know, until the pain is unbearable. That's human cost. No one seems to care about what it really means to have a health problem. It's a statistic, and it's so, it's the human cost is diminished as if it doesn't matter. Do you find that under Obamacare, we're adopting that same mentality of it's just a number, get over it, you should be happy that you have any health insurance at all, and it's all equal?
Yeah, I think that's a very serious concern. I mean, we've all been listening to discussions of health reform over the last, really 2 decades at least, I think. And, you know, one of the things that has really concerned me is that it has become primarily about numbers. It's about trying to get this budget number to match up with that budget number, mm-hmm. And what is lost in the whole discussion is the idea of, you know, quality health care. It seems like it's more important in Washington, D.C. to shave $10 billion here off of a number without really recognizing what that means, that it means less access to care, lower quality of care, longer waits for care. And, yeah, I think that it really has become all about saving money and not about providing care.
The one thing I noticed that's a common point among all of these proposals is that does not take in consideration the doctor-patient relationship at all. I don't know if you saw this article. It came out a couple of days ago about the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement and the fact that the administration is secretly negotiating to change the power, the monopoly power for pharmaceutical companies, meaning that if they have a drug and there's a generic version of it, it still won't be pushed for formulary because the length of time for a monopoly has been extended, and the pharmaceutical companies will be allowed to set their price worldwide. So you can no longer – I can foresee this happening there. If there's an AIDS drug in Africa that's pennies on the dollar, you no longer will be able to offer that. It has to be the full price. So, you know, it makes sense to me now that there's a bigger picture why the pharmaceutical industry was in bed with the whole Obamacare fiasco, because they stood to gain. I just didn't know how much they stood to gain. I thought it was just our country, but it's actually potentially global.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard about that story on the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. You know, one of the things, and I only have a bachelor's degree in economics, so, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, I guess, but one of the things that I've sort of seen over the years is that the whole concept of healthcare in the U.S. and around the world in a lot of cases is, you know, reform is defined as trying to get better, more sophisticated price controls. Mm-hmm. And as anybody who, you know, managed to make it through their freshman year of economics can tell you, price controls don't work. They cause massive distortions. They don't allow for the type of price discrimination, and price discrimination is a good thing. It allows, you know, somebody to sell, you know, medicines to Africa for much less than they would sell them in a wealthy country like the U.S. or the United Kingdom. You know, the embedded in so much of the healthcare reform discussion these days is the idea that we just need to get better price controls, and you're never going to get better price controls. They just, you know, I mean, I suppose you can get less horrible price controls if you get lucky from time to time, but markets need real prices, and trying to put price controls on the system just doesn't work. It results in that sort of human misery that you were talking about earlier, where people just can't get the care that they need because the system has so badly messed things up that doctors, you know, decide to drop out of the system and go cash only or open a direct care practice or, you know, in some other way just opt out of the system.
You know, we're going to get into that in greater detail in the next segment. But that's the answer. The people who opt out, the people who don't play this game, are the ones that actually give value for what they offer and actually have to compete. And so there is no gouging. There is no artificial elevation of pricing. And there is no cost shifting because of it. I mean, what you just described works for, you know, developing countries such as Africa or somewhere where, you know, that people struggle. But the flip side of it is it jacks up the price for people who can afford it, like the United States. We subsidize everybody in the world by paying these higher, exorbitant, ridiculous drug prices because it doesn't cost that much in Mexico or Canada or New Zealand, Australia, because we're paying it. And there has to be some payout, I think, for us to enter the ICD-10 system. This is what the drug companies are going to stand to gain. The prices worldwide goes up to cover what the United States no longer will be able to cover, technically. It's just a big whack-a-mole, basically. You know, it's sick.
It is. And one of the problems with drug prices in the U.S. is because you have, you know, wealthy nations like Canada, like the U.K., like Germany, like Japan, that do impose price controls on what drugs can be sold in their countries, then, yeah, that does then push the prices up here in the U.S.
And also the ability to access cheaper variations are also being diminished. you know, they're talking about, and it's been talked about ad nauseum, and I think at some point they might win this argument about supplements, the Codex Alimentarius, that whole UN push to basically outlaw supplements, which is the actual natural alternative to all of this pharmaceutical nonsense that seems to be preceding or predominating healthcare around the world. It's in the pharmaceutical company's interest, if you really think about the big picture, to remove their competition. And that means getting rid of vitamin D or vitamin C, outlawing it, making it sound like it doesn't work or it's poison, while they create a fake version of it and then make it a prescription. We as consumers need to be a lot more savvy about what is being done to us, I think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, being an informed patient is, you know, vital to receiving good health care. I mean, I know people that their idea of good health care is they walk into the doctor's office and then they're just a passive object at that point that the doctor does health care to, kind of an inanimate object, the way somebody might repair a car. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if people want to pursue that route, I suppose that's okay as long as they're willing to, you know, pay for the quality or lack thereof of what they get. But really being an involved patient and sort of knowing what your options are, asking questions, and taking, you know, some responsibility for your own health care, it really is key, I think, to maintaining good health and, you know, getting good value for your health care dollars.
You said the magic words. It's personal responsibility. That is the key to all of this. I don't think we'd be in this situation or moving down this pathway if people would actually take responsibility for their actions. If you depend on the government to bail you out, to think for you, to raise your children, to, you know, to do everything for you, you're going to end up behind the eight ball. I mean, I don't think there's anybody really who was a critical thinker who thinks that whatever the government does is fabulous and it's wonderful no matter what. I don't think anybody can say that. The system doesn't run properly. We see there's a logjam already on Capitol Hill, but it's not moving anywhere. I mean, this budget that they just passed, for example, doesn't do anything to stop the deficit, to decrease costs. It doesn't do anything. It just keeps the same train running down the same track. And that's all they do is just kick the can down the road, and it's all about the next election. And whoever's in the way, so be it.
Yeah, I think that anyone who has watched the rollout of Obamacare over these past few months should not feel terribly comfortable about the idea of the government, you know, being the most competent actor around. They have certainly managed to demonstrate what a lot of critics have been saying for years about the size and scope of the government and are trying to do too much in areas that it shouldn't be doing.
And have no expertise in doing it. You know, we're talking about the government deciding personal health care choices for people, you know, whether or not medicine, something, a procedure gets covered, whether medicine is on a formulary. This is a faceless bureaucratic entity that'll get to decide personal decisions that should be between the doctor and the patient. It's really just a seizing of power that's, I don't think there's anything that you can say that has happened like this in this country in the past. I mean, with 6 of the economy potentially gets removed from a doctor and a patient, a personal choice, and the government gets to rule it. I think it's kind of frightening, actually.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a very large intrusion onto the doctor-patient relationship, at least I certainly believe so. But as you know, there are a variety of ways that people can opt out of that and choose to have a real relationship with their doctor that doesn't involve either insurance bureaucrats or government bureaucrats, nobody except for the patient and the doctor.
And when we take a break, we're going to come back and we're going to explore and tease out exactly, you know, give people a blueprint for how they can stop being a victim and actually take their power back. And before when I came in, I talked to my producer about the fact that it's kind of disheartening that people just cede their power, that they feel like they're incapacitated because it's so overwhelming. It's now time to stop being afraid and start taking action. And when we come back, we're going to give you some tools so you can start being your own person again. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that snoring can lead to chronic health problems? Snoring can be a sign of sleep apnea. Snoring is simply noisy breathing that can disturb those around you. However, sleep apnea is a serious condition that leads to a decrease in oxygen in the blood. The brain and the heart are two organs that depend on oxygen to function well. Studies have shown that a lack of oxygen at night leads to weight gain, problems with memory and concentration, depression, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, and stroke. There are several ways to decrease snoring. For example, lose weight if you are overweight. Avoid alcohol at least 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. Stop smoking. Control nasal allergies to things such as dust and mold. And avoid eating dairy products such as milk and cheese. If you think you have sleep apnea, you should see a doctor to be evaluated. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a frank discussion today with Mr. Sean Parnell, the founder of the Self-Pay Patient. And prior to the break, we were talking about where we stand and how we got to this point of centralized medical control. I don't know if you've heard this as well, that the government is going to pay the insurance companies, just cut them a check for the people who have signed up for Obamacare. There's no real way to determine what someone's ability to pay is, how much of a supplement or supplement that the government should pay. So they're just going to wholesale cut a check to the insurance company. It's rife with fraud. The insurance company gets a bailout. And for me, the way I see it is it's ushered in single payer. Underhandedly, because if the government is actually paying for your premiums, then by definition, you've entered the system that everybody should fear, which is the government ultimately controlling your healthcare dollar completely, which means controlling your choice. You heard about that, right?
Yeah, I certainly had heard that the government was basically just going to guess how much they owe to the insurance companies and send them a check. Doesn't really seem very prudent to me, but I guess when the law is as flexible as they think it is, they can do those sorts of things and not really pay much attention to what the law says or how much the insurance companies actually might be owed.
it's a scam, all right? It's not even a Ponzi scheme because no one benefits from this. It's just a straight-up scam. let's talk about solutions now. Most people think that they have to enter this system, that they've got no choice, that they just need to be led to the slaughter. What is the law really about how you can opt out from Obamacare?
Sure. The law basically says that you're required to have qualified health coverage, which is basically these expensive plans that cover a lot of services that some people don't really need or want, or you pay a fine, or actually a tax for being uninsured. If you don't have a health insurance plan that the government finds satisfactory. But there are a number of exemptions, and the most interesting one, at least I think, would be what are known as health care sharing ministries. And these are basically voluntary organizations of people that agree to share one another's medical bills that people can join. The cost of joining is typically about one half of what a comparable insurance policy would be. There are four of these organizations. Three of them are only for Christians. The fourth is accepts people of all faiths or no faith at all, for that matter. And the neat, there's a couple of really neat things about these healthcare sharing ministries. In addition to being less expensive, they basically function as an insurance company. They aren't technically insurance. They aren't regulated under all of the insurance laws, either at the federal or the state level, which means, for example, that they don't have to cover contraception or abortion, which a lot of people obviously find highly objectionable. The other neat thing is that if you are a member of a healthcare sharing ministry, you don't actually have to pay the tax for being uninsured. Even though technically you're under the law, you're considered uninsured, you get an exemption. You don't have to pay that the fine for being uninsured.
I want to make that clear to folks. This is a carve out. You get to be one of the cronies, basically, that you don't have to be under the yoke of this system, and you're following the law. You're not flouting it. You're actually playing the game, and you're winning this one. So you don't have, basically, if you don't have any other thing, as long as you go to these websites and sign up, there's nothing that's inhibiting you. Basically, if you meet their criteria, you, by definition, are out of Obamacare. Is that a better way to put it, or an easy way for people to understand that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it. If you join a ministry or a sharing organization, you have effectively opted out of Obamacare. Yeah, I think that's exactly the way to describe it.
And I think the other good part that we're going to get into is that you don't have to sacrifice. You know, this is really very Orwellian, because under Obamacare, you're going to be stuck with not having coverage for many things. They're going to decide what's medically necessary, what's experimental, what they'll pay for. And the independent advisory board, which is going to come online, will get to decide what medicines will be covered. This is not a system where you just get to do you. This is going to be somebody holding the purse strings and rationing your access to care. This system, the one that we're discussing now, is the opposite. You are voluntarily sharing your costs with like-minded people whose whole objective is to provide care. It's not to deny it. It's to actually help you get what you need. Is that a way to put it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
So ultimately, it actually operates as health insurance should operate. You know, I've said it multiple times that health insurance, just because you have it, just because you buy it, doesn't mean you're going to get good health care. This system actually works the way it's designed to work. If you carry this premium or this coverage through this sharing ministry, you are guaranteed by your like-mindedness, by your ability, your word, your ethics, your morals, your how can I put it, your opting in of the system means that you have protection. No one's going to take
yes.
it from you. Nobody's deciding that, hey, you cost too much, so we're going to cut you out. When you really need it, and I love this, and I mean that sarcastically, every time someone covers insurance or has insurance and they really need it, I can't tell you how hard they have to fight to get the insurance company to actually do what they're supposed to do. And the more expensive the ticket is, the item, the line item, the harder the insurance company fights not to provide the service. That's really wrong. This is not
something
you have to fight. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think we all know people, and I certainly do, that have had to fight their insurance company for months and even years trying to get them to cover a particular treatment or pay for a bill that, you know, the doctor said this is the treatment that they needed and the patient agreed to it, and somebody sitting in a cubicle 1,000 miles away is saying, well, gee, it didn't, you know, fit our criteria. We don't care what your doctor said.
Exactly.
And, that's just absolutely the wrong way to try and deliver something, you know, called health insurance. It leaves people at the mercies of bureaucrats instead of preserving the doctor-patient relationship.
And I think people need to really get the fact that under Obamacare, that system is expanded. They double down on that same mindset. And it's going to be worse, frankly.
It certainly would not surprise me if that's what happens. You mentioned the IPAB and that's more about Medicare, at least initially, but I suspect it will sort of creep over into the private sector. But yeah, I mean, their basic function is to cut reimbursement rates, making decisions on what sort of care is valuable and which isn't, and if it isn't very valuable in the bureaucrats' estimation, then they just cut the reimbursement rates so low that no doctor can provide it, or else they would go out of business trying to provide it at that rate.
That's what they do now. And let me fill in the blanks for you, because as Medicare goes, so does private health insurance. They set the tone for the healthcare delivery in our country, how much something should cost, what should be covered, the coding system, everything is set, is the foundation of it is Medicare. So those independent boards will, as once they set their template, the insurance companies are going to adopt it. And they're going to adopt, it's in their favor to adopt as rigorous policy as they possibly can, because it means you're going to pay in and not ever get the service. And that's how they make their money. So it works against patients, quite frankly, because their whole job is to feed themselves and their board of directors and their investors, not to give patients care. It's actually the opposite. It shouldn't be allowed to exist, really, because it works against the actual mandate that they're supposed that they exist under, which is to provide you services that you pay for. Now, I really don't think people understand this, and I've gotten a taste of this recently, where I've been told by insurance companies that what I want to do, what my American Board of Otolaryngology says is appropriate and proper medical treatment, has been wholesalely said it's not important, it's not medically necessary. And the insurance company has decided that they get to decide what medical treatment should be and what's medically necessary and what's experimental. And that's expanded. I've never seen so many denials recently or pre-certifications, just whimsically, on the basis of what insurance company decides it wants to do this month. And it's not going to get any better. I think people need to really understand there's going to be a fight from here on in as the implementation of this law comes into effect. And for me as a physician, I'm tired of fighting. And if I can deal with these sharing ministries where we, the patient and I, come to a consensus of what this problem is and how to fix it, and this organization, I meet, you know, I'm happy with what they're going to offer me, and we just make a deal, and it's just a transaction without drama, that's the way to go, I would think.
Yeah, and there are a growing number of doctors that are sort of embracing that model, where they basically are just telling the insurance companies, no, thank you, the health care I deliver is between me and my patient, and I will give the patient a bill at the end of the visit or the treatment, and the patient will pay it, and there's no room for the insurance company in that sort of thing, and it does restore the doctor-patient relationship.
I know that you're an expert on this because this is what you do daily. Why is it, and just for patients' edification, why would it be cheaper for a doctor to just deal with the patient and not deal with insurance companies? People think, hey, the insurance company is paying for it. There's a buffer. There's something that's actually absorbing some of this cost. Tell people exactly how that differs when the doctor-patient cut this middleman out. Why would it be cheaper?
Yeah, basically because doctors, in order to get reimbursed from an insurance company, they have to have their own administrative apparatus to process these bills. And these aren't, it isn't just a matter of taking the bill that they generate and dropping it in the mail and sending it off. It has to comply with each insurance company's particular coding requirements, and invariably there are mistakes, and so the bills wind up getting bounced back and forth, and there's a huge bureaucratic cost. A lot of doctors who have gone towards this cash-only model, what they will tell you is that they're able to cut their overhead by 40, 50, 60, 70% simply because they don't have to have two or three staffers whose only job is to, pass pieces of paper back and forth to the insurance companies in the hope that eventually the insurance company will relent and actually pay the bill. Mm-hmm. If they simply, give the patient a bill at the end of the visit, then they go ahead, they get their payment right there. There's no need for this big bureaucracy.
That's the beauty of it. Everybody, it's transparency. You know what you're getting. You know how much you're going to pay. and the doctor knows how much he or she will be getting, and there's no waiting for it. I mean, this is business. This is economics, right? 101, right?
Yeah, it really is. You know, one of the things that people think insurance companies do is that they think that they negotiate better rates because they can buy in bulk. Mm-hmm. But that's not actually what happens with an insurance company. An insurance company doesn't go to, say, you and ask for, you know, 100 visits each month, and then, you know, they'll just send people over. They send you people one at a time, and so there is no bulk buying. It's just lots of individual sales, and so there really is no savings administratively from a sales perspective of dealing with insurance companies. It actually adds a lot to the process.
That's an excellent point. On that note, let's take a break and return. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that dizziness may be a sign of heart disease, iron deficiency, high or low blood pressure, low blood sugar, or an inner ear infection? Dizziness can take the form of a spinning sensation, also known as vertigo, or a feeling of lightheadedness. The individual can also feel faint or have a rapid heartbeat. If you take high blood pressure medication, remember to take the medication daily as directed to control your blood pressure. Diabetics must remember to eat after taking their medication and to eat at regular intervals. If you have anemia, make sure to take a multivitamin that contains iron and to eat vegetables such as spinach. Dizziness after a cold or flu may be due to a virus. If you have dizziness, it is important to see your doctor for a complete physical examination. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, we were really getting into the nuts and bolts of insurance companies, and it occurred to me in the break that this is the best snow job, the best scam that's ever been run on people, because the insurance companies they sell themselves on the false belief that they're helping you, that if you pay into this system, that they've got your back, and that when you need them, they're going to just cough up money, everything that you need to make you whole. That doesn't happen. I mean, if you think about this, $15,000 to $20,000 are the average premium paid per year. An average person, a healthy person, probably doesn't even go to the doctor. Maybe they might go once or twice a year. So maybe max out of the pocket, maybe they paid $1,000. That's generous. The insurance company pocketed the rest of it. And then they have the unmitigated gall to deny people who've paid in the system for years, and when they finally get something that's catastrophic, make you jump through hoops, it's experimental, you need to be pre-certified, all the nonsense that they make you jump through. And it's literally paying into a system and never really getting everything that you paid out of it. And now the government is now mandating by law that you pay into this Ponzi scheme. I don't know about you, but that makes me even more upset when you think about it like that.
Well, I think there's no doubt that the insurance products that the Obamacare is trying to get everybody to buy is, for most people, a bad deal. You know, people talk about the so-called young invincibles. Mm-hmm. These are young people that generally don't feel a need for health insurance. And while I think that that's probably a mistake not to have any sort of coverage at all, I had a college roommate who was 21, 22 when he got diagnosed with testicular cancer. So, I mean, young people do need some form of coverage, but the premiums that they're being charged, the products that they're being forced to buy, don't really match up with what their needs are. Mm-hmm. It's more about getting them to subsidize older people that will, use more healthcare services. And given that, it's no surprise that the Obamacare exchanges are really struggling in a lot of cases to get young people to sign up for insurance products that aren't really geared towards providing them value. It's geared towards subsidizing the costs of those of older people and those few that do have serious health problems.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate because I think they want you to believe that the young people are going to subsidize the seniors and the people who have chronic catastrophic illnesses. But if you listen to what the architects are saying, what Ezekiel Emanuel has said and written, they're going to ration care to those people who this transfer of wealth is supposed to go down to, or go for. They're going to make you jump through hoops. They're going to have independent boards. They're going to, promote hospice, not chronic care, not acute delivery of chronic care. And this money is going to the insurance companies and to the government as a tax. So I don't think that it's going to go to the end point that they say it's going to go to. I think it's being taken from everybody, and everybody has to take one for the team. The seniors, and under this model, under the mindset of the people who are architects of this, they've lived full lives, they should be happy, and they should just basically go out with a whimper and not cost everybody else a lot of money. The young people should pay into a system because, in case, and it's their duty to pay into this Ponzi scheme. And everybody who actually needs it basically are going to wait for the privilege of getting what little meager care they want to offer. And if it's so great, the question is needs to be asked, why won't Congress join it? Why won't the president get into it? Why won't Kathleen Sebelius, any of the people who are running the system, none of them are in it. They don't want to be in it because they know exactly what's going to happen to them. So if it's not good enough for them, by definition, it's not good enough for me or you or any American in this country.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable enough point, and it sort of gets back to what we were talking about earlier, where the focus of reform has been about budgets and saving money with very little thought, as near as I can tell, actually put into, making care more affordable and accessible and of a higher quality and preserving that vital doctor-patient relationship.
Well, I think a lot of thought has been put into siphoning money from our pocketbooks, though. I think a lot of thought has gone into that, how to get it from your payroll without you having the control over writing a check for it, how to tax you ad nauseum from the time you wake up in the morning to the time you go to sleep. There's some tax coming online, and I actually see this as a bigger picture of a society picture. There's a lot of movements now that if you look behind, peel under or look under the hood, it's a little mercenary, the movement for immigration reform. These people are potential, not only are they potential voters, they're potential taxpayers who they can get payroll taxes from. You now have the movement to increase the minimum wage. And what's really funny, and again, sarcastically, is that once these folks end up getting double their minimum wage, it puts them in a different tax bracket. And they're probably going to have, what if they do see an increase in their paycheck, it's going to go out to payroll taxes for Obamacare. It's really kind of funny, isn't it, in the scheme of things?
Well, and as some people have pointed out, the real minimum wage is $0 for people who aren't able to find jobs because they've been priced out of the labor market.
True. Very true. But you have to watch what the other hand's doing as they're promising you fairness and equality. It really doesn't seem to work out that way. It seems to be the system is more fair for those who are special as opposed to everybody else. And as long as it's bureaucracy that's being ingrained while they're demonizing anybody who's putting their head up and saying, hey, this is not right. What you're saying is not really happening. They're doing their darndest to try to silence anybody who actually is a critical thinker. And that we need to, my job or the way I see my role in this is to make sure that I don't cower to this. They want us to be silent and to be afraid and to play the game and just shut up and keep it moving. And as long as we do that, then they're going to win this. And what we're talking about today is the ability to break this stranglehold that they're trying to ingrain or enact. This is the way to break it. If we don't join the system, if you opt out of Obamacare, it dies on the vine. You get what you want. You get more than what you expect to get under Obamacare. Pay less for the privilege and actually get to run your own medical choices. That's a win, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to summarize it. Opting out of Obamacare, if somebody wants to do that, is a great way to ensure that there isn't a government or an insurance bureaucrat looking over the shoulder of your doctor. And the savings are pretty substantial. We were talking earlier about cash-only doctors and mm-hmm. how it is that they can actually charge less to patients who just pay cash for their treatment instead of running it through the insurance system. And that's one great option, but there are a number of options for people who need to pay for their health care, where they can go and find affordable care, pay real prices, transparent prices, and get a higher level of care in a lot of cases, because the people that they're going to also aren't having to deal with insurance bureaucrats or government bureaucrats trying to interfere in the delivery of care. One of the things that people have available to them is a service called Medibid. It's medibid.com, and basically it's an online auction for medical procedures. So if you need, I was actually reading a story several weeks ago about a gentleman in Chicago who needed a colonoscopy, and he was being told by all of the doctors in the Chicago area that it would cost them $3,500, $4,000, $5,000
wow,
to get this procedure done.
Mm-hmm.
He went on Medibid, simply, submitted his request and said, I need a colonoscopy, and he wound up finding a doctor in Oregon who would do it for about $800. And so he was obviously able to save the money that he would have otherwise spent paying for it in the Chicago area, flew out to Oregon, had his colonoscopy done. This is sort of the free market in healthcare that exists today, that people who opt out of Obamacare can take advantage of and wind up paying an awful lot less for their care while still getting the care that they need.
Exactly. And, full disclosure, I actually am a member of Medibid. I'm one of the doctors who you can bid for services on or with.
Fantastic.
And it's about choice. For me as a physician, I get to decide what my value is. Patients can like it or not, but it's an actual free market system. People are board certified. These are excellent doctors. These are all independent physicians. And people need to, it's all about marketing. Patients seem to believe that if you are a member of a hospital or a big, huge hospital system, somehow you're better than an independent doctor. It's actually not true. And the cost associated with going to an independent board certified physician that's not part of the system is cheaper. We need to re-educate people that it's not about who's got the slick presentation on TV and has the big ad campaign. Most of the time, the ad campaigns aren't true, but they have enough money to make you think that they are. And now it's time to, be a really vigilant citizen in here and actually start being a shopper. If people spend half as much time paying attention to quality and actually questioning their doctor, questioning their credentials, questioning the cost of something, we'd be a lot better off. Instead of people being told what they should think. And that's what's going on. Now, you talked a bit, I mean, you wrote an excellent article called How to Opt Out of Obamacare. And if people go to your website, I'm sure they can actually access it. But you mentioned a couple of other ways to go around this system. One is not only joining the health sharing ministries, but short-term health insurance policies. What are those?
Right. These are policies that have actually been popular for quite some time among college students or people that have, they're leaving one job, going to another, and their new coverage at their new job doesn't kick in for a couple of months. They're basically what they sound like. They're insurance policies that are intended to cover 1 or 2 months or 6 months or even up to 11 months. And because they aren't included under Obamacare as what's called qualified health coverage, they don't have to offer all of the same benefits, which are causing the policies in Obamacare to skyrocket in terms of their premiums. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty expensive. You can get higher deductibles. You can avoid having to pay for services that you're not going to use. A 60-year-old man probably doesn't need maternity coverage. Under Obamacare, you have to buy that coverage. If you're a 60-year-old man buying a short-term health insurance policy, however, you don't have to pay for that maternity coverage. So the costs, again, anywhere from a quarter to half of what a roughly comparable policy under Obamacare would be. And for people who are looking for ways to, have coverage with a higher deductible level, and not have to pay for a lot of the stuff that Obamacare would otherwise force them to, a short-term policy can be a pretty good option.
Now, just so we make it clear to people that are listening, does this follow the mandate for carrying insurance? If you have this, does that protect you from paying any kind of fine?
Good question, and unfortunately the answer is no, because it does not count as qualified health coverage.
Okay.
If you have one of these policies, you do still have to pay the tax for being uninsured, which seems kind of counterintuitive to me. I mean, you have insurance, just not insurance the government likes, mm-hmm. but as far as they're concerned, you're uninsured and owe the tax.
It's still cost-effective, really, if you think about it, because it's a $90 fee or tax penalty if you don't carry insurance. That pales in comparison to paying thousands of dollars a month just to carry Obamacare. So you still come out ahead if you don't, if you have to pay the penalty, correct?
For a lot of people, yes, they're going to wind up coming out ahead. Everybody, is going to have to run the numbers for themselves, mm-hmm. but for most people, the penalty, the tax, is pretty small. And actually, for people that don't have a tax refund coming to them, the IRS can't actually collect the tax. The only mm-hmm. way that the IRS is able to collect the tax is to take it from a refund that you are owed. So no refund, no tax. There's some risk to that, I'll admit. You're probably going to irritate, at the very least, your local IRS agent. Just looking at the law, if you don't have a refund due, then you don't, there's no way that they can really collect the tax. Unlike every other tax that the IRS collects, where they can, seize your bank accounts or garnish wages or things like that. Mm-hmm. They can't do any of that in the case of an unpaid Obamacare tax.
Well, that's really good to know. On that note, let's take a break and come back and speak more about alternative insurance products. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Come on. Follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking today with Mr. Sean Parnell of the Self-Pay Patient. And before the break, we were talking about alternatives, options that people, strategies that people can use to try to opt out of Obamacare. And we were talking about short-term health insurance. But there are other insurance products, fixed benefit, critical illness, accident insurance. Can you tell our folks something about those types of products?
Yeah, basically these are insurance products that will pay people a lump sum of cash if they're diagnosed with a certain illness or have a certain treatment. So, for example, a critical illness policy, it's sort of like a life insurance policy in that you select the benefit amount. But if you were to select a $100,000 benefit amount, which is going to be, in almost all cases, much, much, much less expensive to pay for than a conventional health insurance policy under Obamacare. But if you select a $100,000 benefit level and then you get diagnosed with cancer, well, they will write you a check for $100,000, and you can then use that money to go pay for your cancer treatment. The average cost of treating cancer in this country is about $35,000 to $36,000 a year. So for most people, that is going to be more than sufficient to pay for the cost of treating cancer. An accident insurance policy, and I think most people are probably familiar with the one of the largest accident insurance companies in the country because they run these wonderful commercials with the duck. Aflac. What they sell, one of their main products, is accident insurance. And basically these policies, again, much, much less expensive than a conventional health insurance policy. Under these policies, if you go to the emergency room, they'll send you a check for $400. Or if you spend the night in the hospital, they'll send you a check for $1,000 or $2,000, depending on the particular policy that you have. So basically, what it does is it provides cash to people who have a medical diagnosis or are admitted or treated in the hospital or at a doctor's office. And obviously the patient can then take that cash and use it to pay their health care bill. So it functions, again, it was not designed as a substitute for health insurance, but it turns out that it can function pretty well as a substitute for health insurance, and it's just another option for people who want to have control over their health care dollars. Because if you have one of these policies, you're not locked into any particular provider. There's no narrow network. There's no PPO organization. There's no restrictions on which doctors you can see. It's simply a matter of picking the doctor that you want and paying that doctor for treating whatever condition or illness or injury you have. So to my mind, that's a great option for people who are looking to opt out of Obamacare and still have the funds they need to pay for important health care needs if they get hit with, some sort of very serious illness or injury.
I think you can actually extend the power of that kind of strategy by going to the doctors and the facilities that are cash only or self-pay, because you're already getting a good discount through them. Now you can have some, help with actually coming up with the money to pay these same facilities. It kind of doubles the economic power that you have if you actually stay outside of the main system. Would that be a good strategy?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are not very many, unfortunately, but there are a number of hospitals and surgical facilities and treatment facilities that if you walk in the door with cash, they're more than happy to give you a real price, a package price. And that's one of the things about healthcare that not a lot of people really appreciate, at least not until they have the hospital bill in front of them, which is that oftentimes the uninsured will wind up paying the highest charges for their medical treatment, particularly at hospitals, mm-hmm. simply because the hospitals operate in what in economics we would call a non-price market, where there are no real prices. Essentially, the charges that are on a hospital bill are not quite random numbers, but pretty close. They're wildly inflated over what an insurer would pay, what Medicare would pay. Typically anywhere from 3 to 5 times the cost. So, for example, there was a gentleman who's written up in the Wall Street Journal a couple of months back who had to have a hernia repair surgery. And the hospital told him, well, okay, that'll be $22,000 for a hernia repair surgery because you don't have insurance. And that was ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
He actually was able to go find another hospital that when he said, well, I've got cash, I'm just going to pay for this directly, they said, oh, well, it'll be $3,000. This other hospital was willing to, you know, give him something approximating a real price for the hernia operation, whereas this other hospital just said, oh, you're uninsured. You know, you pay list price, and list price is wildly inflated over what it really should be. So having one of these critical illness type of policies puts you in the position of being able to get, if you know basically not to pay retail
mm-hmm.
for your hospital care, it puts you in a pretty good position to get a much better deal oftentimes than even the insurance companies get, because the hospital or the facility knows we don't have to pay, we don't have to deal with all of the bureaucratic hassle and nonsense and
mm-hmm.
costs. You know, he's just going to write us a check at the beginning, right before the surgery, you know, no muss, no fuss, and we get to walk away with the money, and, you know, everybody wins. This is what happens when you're able to eliminate that third-party payer, the insurer or the government, from the process. You actually get much lower prices, and you get much better care in many cases.
Just think about this again. Critical thinking skills need to come into play here, because you run your own show. You get to decide, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to be gouged. I'm going to take control of my own pocketbook, and I'm going to shop around. That, from a doctor-patient perspective, means you can have whatever medication you want, whatever procedure you want done, when you want it, without having to ask permission from someone who's trying to make money off of you. This is really very straightforward. If you just put on your critical thinking cap for a second, you win. You don't have to be a victim. This is really very clear, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what I tell people, there's a lot of people out there, myself included, who tends to favor, you know, the idea of free markets in healthcare, free markets in a lot of things, actually. But, you know, what I tell people is, if you choose to opt out of Obamacare and, you know, join a sharing ministry or get these critical illness and accident insurance policies, and do some of these other things as far as, you know, visiting cash-only doctors and
mm-hmm.
using service like MetaBid, what that means is you are in the free market for healthcare. It functions the way a normal market does, where you have buyers with their own cash who are looking to buy a service, and you have providers that are happy to take that cash and provide that service. I mean, that's how a market operates, or is supposed to operate at least. And that's what people can, you know, have available to them today. One of the things that I tell people who advocate for free market healthcare policy, you know, they want Congress to pass this law allowing interstate sale of health insurance, or do something else in some other area so that we can get free market healthcare. And what I explain to them is, well, you know, those might be, you know, reasonable enough ideas, but you don't have to wait for Congress to do anything to, you know, advance a free market in healthcare. You don't have to wait for the presidency to change hands, or, you know, the right committee man or committee woman in Congress to, you know, move the right bill. You can do it today. If you want to be in a free market for healthcare, you can do that today. No need to wait, no permissions to ask for from, you know, your local congressman or governor or senator. You know, you don't have to wait for anybody else to give you permission to do this. You can just do it right now if you want to.
I think that on that note, there's nothing else I need to add except do exactly what Mr. Parnell just said. Once again, I'd like to thank you for being a guest, and I look forward to having you back. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening to Medicine on Call. Have a great week.